Amen. Thank you, Kim and Jan. Please turn your Bibles with me over to the book of Acts, Acts chapter 19. I say that for the folks that are out there in podcast land. You guys can just look up here. Yeah, because my friend Bill does a great job keeping up with me, stopping when I stop. And so in Acts chapter 19, we are going to talk some more about Ephesus. Now, we need to review because this is what we do. Acts is part of a sequel, the Luke-Acts sequel. Same author, same recipient, a guy named Theophilus, a guy that's in Rome, and he probably has something to do with the trial of Paul the Apostle, who at the end of this book is sitting in prison in Rome awaiting trial. So Luke is giving him some ammunition of how to help Paul. First, by understanding who Jesus is and who his enemies were, and understanding who Paul is and who his enemies are. And we've seen some pretty fascinating things that he has given, like when they were in Corinth, there was a legal precedence. And that was important in Roman law. They went before the proconsul and he said, this has something to do with your law. It has nothing to do with us. And he threw the whole court, threw the whole situation out of the court, right? So we see something like that today in Ephesus as we read chapter 19. Now, we know that Paul tried to go to Asia Minor before and the Spirit wouldn't let him go. But now he's there, and some amazing things are happening. And the text says that everybody throughout Asia Minor has heard that Jews and the Gentiles have heard about Jesus. Now, there's some things about Ephesus you should probably know. I know some of you have been there, which is so cool. But in this time, it was the second largest city in the Roman Empire. It's hard to think about that. But it was a big place. And there, they had one of the ancient wonders of the world, which was the Temple of Artemis. They also had a really cool amphitheater, and they have uncovered the amphitheater. The problem with Ephesus was the river that ran through had a tendency to silt up, and so they kind of had to keep moving the city because how you could get far, you know, how far you could navigate up that river. But at this time, we know that there was an amphitheater there. We know it was a bustling place. We know that Paul spends over 2 years there teaching, not in Jewish synagogues, but in the school of Tyrannus. And it is a success so far, as far as getting the word of God out. So that takes us to chapter 19, and we're going to start in verse, oh my goodness, I have different glasses on today. You never have one of those days when your eyes just don't want to focus? And these words get really small, so I'm going to put some more powerful glasses on. Okay, in verse 23, about that time, there arose a great disturbance about the way. Wow. We have a name for what's going on. A name that Luke chooses to use. The way. I mean, how do you explain Christianity in a title for somebody to understand? But this is what they are calling their movement, their faith in Jesus. The way. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me. He said in verse 24, a silversmith named Demetrius, who made silver shrines of Artemis, brought in no little business for the craftsmen. He called them together, along with the workmen in related trades, and said, men, you know, we receive a good income from this business. And you see and hear how this fellow Paul has convinced and led astray large numbers of people here in Ephesus and in practically the whole province of Asia. He says that man-made gods are no gods at all. There is danger not only that our trade will lose its good name, but also that the temple of the great goddess of Artemis will be discredited, and the goddess herself, who is worshipped throughout the province of Asia and the world, will be robbed of her divine majesty. Okay. Do you want to cause some trouble? You hit somebody in the pocketbook. All right. The temple of Artemis is there. You guys remember Artemis, don't you? No. You know Apollos' sister? No. In the Roman world, she'd be called Diana. Diane? How many Dianes we have in here? I know we have so many Dianes. Okay. She was the goddess of the hunt. She forswore marriage and intimacy and childbirth. Strangely enough, she became a goddess of fertility in this area. She wore a lot of hats, and she had this funny-looking statue. Now, we're going to hear that they believe that the image of her fell from heaven. And that was the lore, right? So people would come all over to worship Artemis. Now, how do you worship somebody like that? Well, their prayers, their sacrifices, their shrines. Are you familiar with shrines? Yeah, you have them at home. You probably don't have them at home here, but that's what you do with a shrine. You bring it home, put it in your yard, or you put it in your community, and this is where you would go to pray and come into the presence of that deity, right? Now, if you're doing well, what's your shrine made out of? Silver. Silver, silver, silver. Your image of Artemis is made out of silver, and thus you have Demetrius the silversmith, who gathers everybody who has to do with making silver shrines for Artemis. Now, when you go to Paris and you go down to see the Eiffel Tower, what's for sale? Yeah, little Eiffel Towers. Right? Are pictures of the Eiffel Tower, right? And day after day, week after week, month after month, they're out there selling little Eiffel Towers because there's money in it. You go to New York City and you go out to see the Statue of Liberty, guess what you see? Little Statues of Liberty, right? There's money in this. And Paul, in his teaching about gods, has affected the sales of those shrines. And if you want to mobilize people, you affect their income. And so he gets together with others and he organizes them. We've got to do something about this guy because we don't want Artemis to be disgraced because we have to take care of our God. Yeah. Kind of a strange idea, isn't it? But that's what they think. But mostly they have to take care of their business. And so they've acknowledged that Paul is really cutting into their business. He says in verse 28, when they heard this, they were furious and began shouting, "Great is Artemis of the Ephesians." Soon, the whole city was in an uproar. The people seized Gaius and Aristarchus, I can't say his name, Paul's traveling companions from Macedonia, and they rushed as one man into the theater, and this is the amphitheater that they have excavated. Paul wanted to appear before the crowd, but the disciples would not let him. Even some of the officials of the province, friends of Paul, sent him a message begging him not to venture into the theater. Paul wanted to go speak. Would not have helped the situation at all. He got some good advice here. Don't go down there, Paul. Don't go down there. We beg you, don't go down there. He said in verse 32, the assembly was in confusion. Some were shouting one thing, some another. Most of the people did not even know why they were there. The Jews pushed Alexander to the front, and some of the crowd shouted instructions to him. He motioned for silence in order to make a defense before the people. But they realized that he was a Jew. When they realized he was a Jew, they all shouted in unison for about 2 hours, "Great is Artemis of the Ephesians." Okay, now they're all in the same script. 2 hours of shouting. Great. When was the last time you went to a football game? Yeah. Do you remember shouting for your team? Do you remember how your voice felt afterwards? 2 hours of shouting the same thing. Great is Artemis of the Ephesians. Great is Artemis of the Ephesians. 2 hours. So this person that was up there, and we don't know anything about Alexander. We don't. We just know he's Jewish. We assume that he might have had something to do with Christianity or the way, or maybe he was on the other side as wanting to. We don't know. We do know that Paul, in one of his letters to Timothy, mentions an Alexander who was a metal worker who did him great harm. Don't know. Don't know if it's the same one. Luke doesn't go out of his way to explain. Okay. We have another interesting reference. In 1 Corinthians 15, one of my famous favorite chapters about the resurrection. And Paul said, hey, if there's no resurrection, and the dead aren't raised, and Jesus isn't raised, and we're not going to be raised. And he said, if I fought wild beasts in Ephesus for purely human reasons, what good is that? Fought wild beasts in Ephesus. And of course, here's where our mind goes. Our mind goes to the Colosseum, right? And people literally being consumed by wild beasts for their faith. Don't know. We don't know what Paul was saying. He did not list that in this whole litany of all the things he suffered, the shipwrecks, the beatings and all that. He didn't say, oh yeah, and I got mauled by lions. He didn't say that. But there was something that happened in Ephesus that it was the equivalent of fighting wild beasts. And it could be a reference to this. In this big mob action where they can shout for 2 hours, great is Artemis of the Ephesians. It says here, verse 35, the city clerk quieted the crowd and said, men of Ephesus, doesn't all the world know that the city of Ephesians is the guardian of the temple of the great Artemis and her image which fell from heaven? Therefore, since these facts are undeniable, you ought to be quiet and not do anything rash. You have brought these men here, though they have neither robbed temples or blasphemed our goddess. If then Demetrius and his fellow craftsmen have a grievance against anyone, the courts are open and there are proconsuls. They can press charges. If there is anything further you want to bring up, it must be settled in a legal assembly. As it is, we are in danger of being charged with rioting because of today's events. In that case, we would not be able to account for this commotion, since there is no reason for it. After he said this, he dismissed the assembly. Okay. An official got up and said, what are you guys doing? What are you doing? I know Demetrius has a gripe and all those people. They can go before the proconsul. They can go to legal things, but we are in danger. We are in danger of rioting. You know how much the Romans loved riots? They hated riots. You wanted to lose all of your freedoms? Riot. Okay, what is a riot? I named this sermon, "We're Having a Riot." A riot. Did you notice what the clerk said? There is no reason for this. Do you know why Luke put this story in? Because there's going to be a riot in Jerusalem. It's going to involve a guy named Paul. It's going to end up with Paul being arrested and eventually taken to Rome as a prisoner. There is no reason for this. Okay. It's a fascinating story. Because you know what Paul does next? He leaves. Which is a smart thing to do. If you are the center of getting everybody riled up and they can't hear about Jesus, then it's time to leave. Yeah. Oh, and since I'm not going to get a chance to go beyond Acts, you know what he does? He goes back to Troas. And what he's doing is he's assembling everybody who has made contributions from churches to take to Jerusalem to the Christians that were hurting there. And he takes one person from each province or each church to make sure the money is distributed correctly. So he has to go gather all of this stuff up. So he goes back to Troas. And guess who comes from Philippi? Well, wait a minute. We have more to cover here, right? I'm sorry. Because I remember putting it in here so you could see that. And in chapter 20, verse 1, he says, "When the uproar had ended, Paul sent for the disciples, and after encouraging them, said goodbye, and set out for Macedonia. He traveled through the area, speaking many words of encouragement to the people, and finally arrived in Greece, where he stayed 3 months. Because the Jews made a plot against him just as he was about to sail for Syria, he decided to go back through Macedonia. He was accompanied by Sopater, son of Pyrrhus, from Berea, Aristarchus, and Secnudus," aren't these great names? Okay. "From Thessalonica, Gaius from Derbe, Timothy also, and from the province of Asia, Tychius and Trophimus. These men went on ahead and waited for," and there it is, "us." Our author is back. Remember we left Luke in Philippi? He's back. He says, "But we sailed from Philippi after the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and 5 days later, joined the others at Troas, where we stayed 7 days." Troas, where we picked up Luke. Left him at Philippi. He's back. Now everything to the end of the book is going to be in plural, because Luke gets to stay with Paul through some very, very trying and unsettling times and unsettling journeys. Okay, why did I bring that up? Paul's got plans, and it involves helping other people, and he runs into problems everywhere he goes. And he makes a decision to go back through Macedonia, and he doesn't go to Corinth. And Corinth, that church gets really upset about the whole thing because he said he was going to come and he didn't come. Okay, this is life. This is changes. This is where things go. Now, in Troas, he's going to preach. And he thinks it's the last time he gets to preach to him, so he preaches until midnight. You remember that story? Remember the dude falling out the window? Yeah. Talk about a tragedy. He preached someone to death. I've come close. Now, I have to tell you this because, preachers love to do this, to talk about how long they talk and it's okay. He preached till midnight. But he didn't start at 9:30 on Sunday morning. Okay, the first day of the week became the first day of the week at Saturday at 6. And that's when they could meet. The Jews and the Gentiles could meet together. And so at most he preached 6 hours. But I'm sure that there were other things involved because, you know, we can't get together without eating. I'm sure there was some meals involved and things like that. Okay. What do we do with this story? We know why Luke put it in there. How do we make application ourselves? But it really has to do with the riot. I think that's something we can learn in a riot. What is a riot? You know, in the book of Galatians, chapter 5, verse 19, there's a list of the acts of the sinful nature are obvious: sexual immorality, impurity, debauchery, hatred, discord. It goes on and on. And one of them in there is, and your translation may say carousing. Most of them say orgies. Now, when we think of orgies, we think of sexual orgies. And that is not what the word is about. Carousing. This has to do with group thinking. This has to do with giving up your thought process to a group of people. And it usually ends up in some kind of riot. People shouting things, people there don't even know why they're there. But they're part of this group, and because the group shouts, we shout, right? Some of my favorite illustrations throughout the years have been, and I know this from childhood, is windows get broken when boys run in groups that would not be broken if the boys were alone. Because it becomes a group think. And it usually ends up with something destructive. Yeah. When you give up your ability to make decisions to a group, and you don't take responsibility anymore for those decisions. You know, I love it when, we do this a lot less now, I think because it gets expensive. But it used to be when teams won championships, everybody would run down to the field. You remember what they used to do? They tear up the goalpost, or they take pieces of turf, because that sounds like a good idea at the time. What are you going to do with that? I'm going to hang it on the wall, water it every day, and mow it once a week. It's mob thinking. It's group thinking. And if somebody sat down and said, hey, does this make sense? What does tearing down the goalpost do for us? Yeah. But to give up your ability to claim your thoughts and your actions to a group of people, that is in the list of the acts of the sinful nature. We need to take personal responsibility for our own actions and thoughts. We need to take personal responsibility for our goals. Now, this is important for Sun City Christian right now, because we're going through some changes here, right? We're going to have Reverend Brett here, right? And there's some natural reactions when you have a new pastor, a new leader, and it's not always positive. They're not always positive. And you may get into a group of people that say, you know, it's just not what it used to be, and I don't like it, and it's all... No. Your spiritual growth is your responsibility. It is. And yes, a pastor, an elder, a spiritual friend can help you, but they can't do it for you. They can't. They're not responsible for doing it for you. You are responsible for your own spiritual growth. You guys have done amazing work as far as learning skills to understand your Bible. And I was happy to be part of that, but still, it's your skills. What are you going to do with them? Your responsibility. And if you're looking for a group that says, hey, we all need to agree that this is all good and this is all what, good luck. Good luck. And besides that, you wouldn't even like those people anyway. They'd be so boring, right? But the important thing is, you can't give up your responsibility for your own actions and your own thoughts. You can't turn that over to a group of people. They may make you different, and you may stand out, and you may get a lot of pressure to just come and shout, great is Artemis of the Ephesians for 2 hours. Yeah, don't do it. Because it's you and Jesus. And it's your relationship with Jesus. It's not my relationship and your relationship together with Jesus. Yes, I can encourage you. You can encourage me in my relationship. But it's my relationship, my decisions, my spiritual growth. And as you have a new pastor, help him help you. Here's the first thing to remember. He may be talented, but he cannot read your mind. If you have a problem, if you have a need, verbalize it. Use your words so you can get help. You know that he won't know that you've gone to the hospital unless you call him. He doesn't check every day and say, hey, any of my people in the hospital today? Yeah. You go in the hospital, you need prayers? Call. Ask. Let them know. If you see a problem, verbalize that. Help him to be helpful to you. Take responsibility for that. Yeah, you know, Gary never did this for us. Well, Gary might not have known that you needed that. Did you tell him? You know, next week we're going to have a special, it's Thanksgiving. It's this Thanksgiving sermon. And I get a chance to look at some scriptures that Paul wrote about him being thankful for churches and being able, my being able to express those things to you. Because I am so thankful for you. Right? We're also going to take a time to have a series of confessions and asking for forgiveness, where I get a chance to ask you to forgive me for falling down, for not saying something I should or saying something wrong. And you have a chance to say the same thing to me, because we need that all the time with each other, don't we? And we'll take that, we'll own it, and I will own it, because I want to remain thankful for you and for our time together. And I want to see your spiritual growth continue. And you want to see my spiritual growth continue. That's why we do this. We take responsibility for it. And that brings us to the Lord's Supper. And taking responsibility to make this meaningful and not just some religious thing that we do. To actually remember, to actually reattach, to become a member again with what we are talking about, that Jesus had a body. And he laid that body down for us. And he had a life, had blood, and he shed it for us. so that we can have what we have now. But it's your responsibility to make it. We have a wonderful music team, and they lead us in a hymn to prepare our minds. You could be here, you could be someplace else, but it's your responsibility. If this is going to be meaningful, it's up to you. And it is meaningful because it binds us all together and makes us remember what's important. This morning, everybody is invited to take the Lord's Supper. Everybody who believes Jesus is Lord, everybody who believes that Jesus died for them. You may not agree with everything I say, surely not. You may not agree with everything the person next to you thinks or says or remembers. You know what? The important thing is, do they believe Jesus is Lord, and can you encourage them in that? So we take the Lord's Supper together. First, we're going to ask our music team, again, to come and lead us in song to prepare our minds for the Lord's Supper.